You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
How can helping a stray dog or cat in a third world country improve the health of the local community, the nation, and volunteer animal caregivers that reside thousands of miles away? It's amazing what a little compassion, a lot of hard work, and some dedicated volunteers can accomplish. My guests are Aaron Skillen and Mike Raverkin of May Street Productions Limited. They're Canadian award-winning producers of entertaining television with substance. We'll be right back after the short break to hear about a fascinating project they're involved with.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Pet Life Radio, the number one pet radio network on the planet, joins forces with iHeartRadio to put the power of your pets in your pocket.
Awesome.
Download the iHeartRadio app and rock Pet Life Radio on your phone, on your tablet, on your Xbox, in your car. Pet talk, pet tunes, and fun pet times. Pet Life Radio and iHeartRadio. Positively possum.
It's DesignerPetSweaters.com, the latest fashion trends for our furry friends. Hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit DesignerPetSweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Your pets will stay warm for the winter and be runway ready. Large or small, we fit them all. DesignerPetSweaters.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Aaron and Mike, thank you so much for being with us. I think this is just really fascinating what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Aaron, I learned about this kind of by happenstance through a Twitter feed, going, I wonder what this is. It was talking about Vets Without Borders. Now, I think most people have heard about Doctors Without Borders, but give us a little background. What is Vets Without Borders?
Yeah, it's actually amazing that there is a full-on organization, Veterinarians Without Borders, and we discovered the organization. It's actually, this chapter is based in Canada, which was surprising. It was very exciting to see that we had this going on here and that we had just vets that were committed to helping people by helping animals.
So, Mike, how did you get involved with this project? Because, as I understand, this is Mexico, South America, and you're Canadian. So how did May Street get involved with this?
I got involved with the project through Erin. She's sort of the driving force and the passion behind it. And she got in touch with Vets Without Borders, I think, 3 years ago to head down to film a project in Guatemala that they were doing for a spay and neuter clinic down there. And then when she came back, we made a web series out of that called, with the same name, Vets Without Borders. And then we went the following year down to Mexico with another organization called Mexican Vet Project. And we did the spay and neuter clinic down there and came back. So, yeah, Aaron, how did you get in touch with Vets Without Borders?
Yeah, it was interesting. It was actually a result. I mentioned this in the campaign video we have on our Indiegogo fundraising campaign. I was actually on vacation in Cuba. And we were sort of out in this kind of back country out of the way, and I discovered a dog that was actually pretty much dying on the beach. It was horribly emaciated, had some open wounds, and in really, really rough shape. And with my very poor Spanish. I was trying to speak with some of the locals about the situation and discovered that this was a dog that was just in terrible shape, but there weren't any vets. So without vet care, unfortunately, there was nothing that could be done for this dog. So that really stuck with me. And so I came home and I was speaking with my business partner, Hillary Pryor at May Street. And I said, look, there's got to be someone that's helping these types of animals in communities that don't have their own, you know, veterinary infrastructure. And it was her idea. She said, well, as you said, there's Doctors Without Borders. I wonder if there's Veterinarians Without Borders. And it was actually a Google search. And she discovered Veterinarians Without Borders. And the thing that really stuck out to us, it was like the universe was speaking, like, yes, you must pursue this, was their office was located in the same city as our office in Victoria. We're not Vancouver, we're not Toronto, we're Victoria. So the fact that their office at that time was right in town, it was like, okay, this is just completely meant to be. And I got them on the phone and we started discussions immediately.
Amazing. I love serendipity. So you mentioned, Erin, that this was the Canadian chapter, and I have to admit, I've never heard of Veterinarians Without Borders, Vets Without Borders. Are there chapters, are there groups throughout the world?
There are some other ones. I'm familiar with one in the States. The Canadian one is kind of, I would say, the biggest and the most active internationally. There is an American chapter, and I don't think they're strictly affiliated. So I've just primarily been dealing with the Canadian one again, who I think they are the most internationally. But Australia has one similar, Veterinarians Beyond Borders. So there are different takes on this type of activity throughout the world.
These veterinarians that assist, I know with Doctors Without Borders, these physicians donate their time, they pay for their own way to get to these not most luxurious locales. You need to think, yes, Guatemala, Mexico, that would be a great place. You can be on the beach, as you're saying, you know, have that umbrella drink in your hand. I really don't think that's what these folks are up to. What are their conditions like?
Well, it's very interesting because the two trips, my husband went to Guatemala with me, and it was a very unique experience because we were actually in a mountain village with the veterinarians. And again, yes, they were all volunteering their time, and they were fortunate. We have a plan here, Aeroplan, actually sponsored them with air miles to fly them down. So that's how we got down to Guatemala. That's how they got there. And it's a tiny mountain village that you have to take a bus from Guatemala City to another smaller community, and then you have to take what's called the chicken bus. So
the chickens and the pigs are on the bus?
There weren't any that day that I could see, but it was interesting. It's just crammed with people, mostly locals who need to get from sort of the next biggest community, which is quite far, just literally crammed, bags thrown on the roof. I'm thinking, oh, my camera gear. This is where you knew, like, okay, this is an adventure unlike anything I've ever been through. Mexico was a bit different. We were working with the Mexican Vet Project, so a different organization. So that was different because there was a Canadian expat community there. So there was infrastructure. There are some local vet clinics. So it was a very different experience, but in both situations, the vets and the vet techs are really being pushed to their limits because they don't have their regular medications. They don't have, you know, x-rays and ultrasounds and all those resources they're used to. So they really are making do with what they have on hand and pushing their creativity and their knowledge to the limit.
Sounds like they're MacGyvering it all the way.
There's a lot of MacGyver action.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I was looking at the video, and we'll have the link posted, and you could see that these volunteers were so extremely passionate about what they were doing and also so extremely frustrated because they didn't have, as you were saying, the equipment. We get used to being in our nice sterile environment and everything is there. You need another pack of gauze because you have a little bleeder or respiration, and there's drugs that you can just reach into your crash cart, and you just have all this equipment and you take it for granted. What have been some of the situations? Because it looked as though one time there was an unfortunate circumstance, and it happens even here in the States and in Canada, where a pet passes. And it really seemed to have a heartbreaking effect on these volunteers and veterinarians. Not just losing the animal, but what else seemed to really bother them?
Yeah, it was a really difficult moment. That was in Guatemala, and they're using different drugs to medicate the dogs in these clinics. And overall, they were hugely successful. Hundreds of dogs were spayed and neutered successfully. But in this one case, just something went wrong, and you can't, the medication doesn't react the same way it does at home, and they did everything that they could. And so it was hard in that, you know, an animal is dying, and I'm sure on some level they were feeling like, I wish I could have done more, why don't we have the stuff we have at home to work with, right? Mm-hmm. But on another level, they were really worried about the message that that was sending the local community. Someone has brought their dog to us, they trust us with this dog, this is possibly the first time this animal has ever seen a veterinarian, and now this dog has died in our care. So what message is that sending to the community? And are people still going to come? They were terrified that people were going to hear about this incident and not come back. And the amazing thing was, that wasn't the case at all. People understood. They said, you know, they had a very different understanding. They said, you know, life is what it is. And if it was that dog's time to go, it was that dog's time to go. And everything you're doing is helping us on the whole. We wish it hadn't happened, but if it had to happen, we understand.
Amazing.
So that made, I think, helped with the vets sort of dealing with their own grief, that there wasn't someone sort of angrily screaming at them and blaming them. It was very much a very understanding experience.
Because even with the best of conditions, things, yes, can sometimes go wrong.
Exactly.
Devastating.
Yeah. And every client is made aware that, you know, it is a risky, there are some risks and everything, but everything else had gone so well, I think there was the expectation that something like this would not happen. And it didn't happen again.
Well, I know that you're down there basically Vets Without Borders doing spay and neuters, and it's cats and dogs. Is that basically all that's being treated?
Veterinarians Without Borders was only focused on dogs. That was their primary focus, because the funding was for the core program is focusing on rabies prevention and controlling the pet population. And so cats weren't as much a focus there. But with the Mexican Vet Project, it was cats and dogs.
And rabies, I think a lot of people find it interesting. You know, in the United States and Canada, rabies, thankfully, is so rare. How common is it down in Mexico and Guatemala and these South American countries?
It seemed rabies wasn't as much of a discussion point or a consideration at the project that we were at, just outside of Puerto Vallarta. But in Guatemala, it's a bigger issue. I don't have, you know, information on rates or anything of that nature, but the fact is dogs were packing up at night and biting people, these dogs. And the difference, it comes down to kind of a difference also with the dogs themselves. Generally, the dogs in Guatemala, they had a food source. They had the city dump was right, totally accessible to them. And there was also a slaughterhouse nearby. So they had offal from that slaughterhouse. So they didn't need people to feed them as much. So they would go and feed on that, and their numbers would increase. And then if they had rabies, they could then bite people and pass the rabies to them. So that was, it's a terrifying situation. And the unusual thing is when you're in Guatemala in this community, you're laying there at night trying to sleep, and all you hear are dogs barking all night, dogs barking, bark, bark, bark all night. And it's a scary thing. If you go out at night, you would take rocks with you or sticks or something, just arming yourself just in case you came upon one of these packs. Well, that has changed substantially since the veterinarians have started working in this community. The numbers are down, and people are starting to feel safer and not worrying as much about getting rabies. If you get rabies in a community like that, you get bitten, the nearest doctor is a chicken bus ride away. And it's not. So it's essentially a death sentence. Even us, knowing that we got vaccinated before we went, knowing that, okay, if you do get bitten by a dog and it does have rabies, you're going to be on a chicken bus with, you know, after being attacked. It's a scary situation.
It sounds very, very terrifying. Mike, I know you were talking about population control, and I'm thinking recently there was a lot of headlines from China where they're also having a major problem with dog overpopulation, and they summarily go out and just slaughter, you know, any dog they see, even if it seems to be a pet dog, they slaughter it. What are they doing down in Guatemala and Mexico? How are they controlling the population besides Vets Without Borders?
There are some very inhumane ways that they do that, and that's why having these organizations go down is such an important role. The spay and neuter actually helps that the most. But yeah, I think in Guatemala, Erin, I think she knows a little bit more about that, but I think it was used like poisoning food.
Yeah, actually poison had been used in both communities, and that's, you know, that's horrible for the dogs, but it's also a risk to the human population as well. So, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. The chances of actually getting the number of animals that you want is not an effective means. And so it's horrifying. It's horrifying what some places in the world are doing. And that's definitely why we want to spread this message about spay and neuter, because it is such an effective way of controlling the population. It's humane, and you can actually see the difference in these communities year after year. And also what the vets are doing when they're there, they have been invited to these communities, and there's very much a partnership with people locally, and there's training that takes place, there's collaboration. So hopefully at some point these volunteer vets will work themselves out of a job in that community, train up people locally, and be able to move on to another community.
I think that's actually what they've been saying has been happening in the community we were at in Mexico, that there was less and less animals coming into the clinics each time they come down because of the work that they've been doing. So they do see positive results as a direct correlation to what they're doing.
I can imagine working with these locals, you know, being invited in just makes it a whole new ball game, because they want you to be there. And you're talking about educating, because I can imagine that some of the customs that they have, their views towards animals, is going to be very different than we have here in North America. So Canada, you know, the United States, where, boy, those animals really now are part of the family. They're the kids. What did you see down there as to how people viewed their pets?
Yeah, it's interesting, because one major difference is the roaming. We keep our dogs on a leash. We keep our dogs in our yards. They have to be under our control in one way or another. In these communities, dogs, both strays and owned dogs, are left to roam, if so be it. Some people keep them in sort of, I would say, a more Canadian-American type approach, where they do have the leash and the collar and all that. But a lot of people just let their dogs roam, which is a very different to see that. You're walking through the town and there's just dogs roaming by. It's very unusual. Whereas here, that dog would generally get scooped up pretty fast and be taken to the pound or the shelter or something of that nature. So that's very different. And in Guatemala, there's definitely a security aspect to having a dog. And the dog had a job in your family, and that job was to protect you. So that was very different. I think some people may do that here as well, but it was just sort of a, they are part of the family in sort of, it's almost like a respected employee as opposed to a family member. They're there, they have a job to do, and as long as they're doing their job, the family will do their best to provide. It's not always possible, but it's a very different approach. And a lot of the dogs were not used to being handled, which was very difficult for the vets and the vet techs to deal with, because they're just not used to having human hands on them in any regard. Like, these people don't sit around generally petting their dogs and cuddling with them. They've got a very hard life themselves. They need to be working. They need to be doing the best they can to provide for their own families. They're not sitting around, you know, brushing their dog and dressing them up in outfits generally. It's not something they have time for. Yeah, again, it was a little bit different in Mexico. There was a bit more, a few more leashes, more collars, a slightly different approach. But it is a very different take if you haven't experienced that before. It is a very unusual experience.
Very enlightening. I'm talking right now with Aaron Skillen and Mike Waverkin. They're of May Street Productions in Canada. We're going to be right back after the short break. Learn more about the documentary that they're making for Vets Without Borders. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's nothing more delicious and healthy than an old family recipe. And for over 50 years, our family's been creating them especially for your pets. Nutrisource Super Premium Pet Foods. Dog and cat food that's all natural, holistic, and organic. Nutrisource pet foods contain our patented Good for Life system for your pet's optimum health and well-being. So, order now. Safe quality food made by our family for your furry family members. Go to NutrisourcePetFoods.com.
From our family to yours, KLM Family Brands.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit PetLifeRadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Hi, I'm Dr. Robin Gansert, President and CEO of American Humane Association, the country's first national humane organization, here to tell you about our new show, Be Humane, on Pet Life Radio. Each week, we'll be bringing you the latest news and issues affecting our animal friends, and we'll also be bringing you interviews with Hollywood's biggest animal advocates, here to share tales about their pets and what they're doing to promote a more humane world. Our own highly experienced staff and friends of the organization will also join us each week to share what they're up to in the animal world. I hope you'll stop by. Until then, let's always remember to be humane.
Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Aaron and Mike, this has really been fascinating. And I can imagine you're talking about how, yes, you're getting rid of the rabies, you're controlling the population, making things safer. I know there's a lot of communities, and I've had the opportunity to work with a humane shelter that's in Tijuana, Mexico, very close to San Diego, California. And one of the things they found is that there's so many diseases, those zoonotic diseases, diseases that can be spread from animals to people. Scabies, yes, rabies, certain types of internal parasites. Were Vets Without Borders involved with taking care of those types of problems also?
Absolutely. There was a huge vaccination effort to try to deal with the various diseases and try to get on top of the situation, because a healthy community requires healthy people, but also healthy animals. So beyond the spay and neuter, all dogs were assessed for general health and also vaccinated and treated for what could be treated with what the vets had available to them.
And taking drugs into another country is not always the safest, smartest thing to do.
No, it's incredibly difficult. There are a lot of strategies at play. And also, it's interesting creatively what they were able to do with some of the pharmacies that are down there, human pharmacies, to be able to figure out, okay, we need this. What is similar to that that we can access at this pharmacy? Who can write us a prescription for that? It's not an easy process. And so every medication that they have managed to get to these clinics has been hard won.
Wow. What have been some of the biggest challenges? Is it money? Is it drugs? Is it volunteers?
It seems to be, it's interesting, a lot of people want to volunteer at these clinics. Even just in doing the documentary, a lot of people end up emailing me saying, I want to volunteer at the clinic. So that is fantastic. The drugs can be a challenge, figuring that out, getting what they need and making sure they have the quantities that they need. I think at the end of the day, as it is with so many different good being done in the world, it's money. These vets, and again, I get emails from people, hey, can you come to this community? Can you come here? Can you come here? The demand is so large, but they can only go to so many places. And so that makes it difficult. They want to help everywhere. They want to be everywhere, helping any animal, any community that needs them. But realistically, there's a lot that goes into these clinics. And even with a team of volunteers and free flights, there's still a lot of expenses that need to be paid for to be able to provide the animals with what they need at the clinics.
Speaking of money and what you have available to you, in the trailer for your documentary, they're showing, you know, okay, here's an animal was hit by a car, has a broken leg. You know, if I was back in Canada, I'd be able to take an x-ray, I could plate it, I could put a pin in it, I could do something to fix this leg. Here, oh, I guess I'm going to have to amputate the leg. Are there situations, it looked like there are times when you try to bring some of these animals back to Canada. How do you decide?
Yeah, that is a complicated issue. Trying to decide, Veterinarians Without Borders as a general policy doesn't bring animals back, but the Mexican Vet Project that we worked with in Mexico, they do bring some dogs back. So they have sort of different criteria that they're looking at. Looking at the, you know, the age and the condition of the pet, can they make the journey? What surgery will be required on the other end? Are these vets capable and willing of providing that once they arrive back in Canada? They also bring some other animals back who may not actually need surgery, but they've been sort of languishing, waiting in Mexico for new homes. And the team that comes down to Mexico knows people who are looking for animals like that and knows that they can match them up with people waiting for dogs back in Canada. So there's a lot of different factors that go into it. Mike and I weren't involved in making any of those decisions, because once you're there, I literally want to fill your bags. Like, okay, everybody get in.
Yeah,
you're all coming back.
It's hard to not want to help every single animal you see. So.
But that being said, there was also a great effort to adopt locally within Mexico. So we did see a lot of local adoptions taking place, because ultimately bringing them back, it's a, you know, for the surgeries and stuff, that really makes sense. But long term, ideally, if the community can sustain and provide enough homes for those animals, that's the ideal situation. So I heard the Mexican Vet Project goes down to Mexico twice a year. And at the most recent clinic, which Mike and I weren't able to go down for, they actually adopted every single cat that came into the clinic was adopted locally within the Mexican community. So that was seen for them. That's a huge victory, that they were able to find homes for each animal, each cat, without having to bring them home to Canada.
Question for you, Mike. With being down there, being one of the producer directors, I'm sure you saw just some totally emotional situations. What was most touching for you?
I'm just a producer. Aaron's the director, just to clarify there. But probably the most emotional was leaving, seeing all the work that the vets had done. And, you know, they had bonded with the animals. They'd also bonded with the people and things like that. So when we were leaving, it was really hard because they had to kind of say goodbye to everything. I think also for that, a lot of the vets, they don't do this on the day-to-day, so it's very touching for them. And seeing them sort of go through that process and having to leave it behind, and it was pretty hard, actually. So
I can imagine people have made some good friends, you know, made some great connections.
Yeah, definitely.
Aaron, you mentioned a little bit about, it seems like, or maybe Mike, you mentioned the number of animals coming in when they go back Mexican doing their clinics in Mexico. The number of animals that are being brought into their clinics seems to be diminishing because you're getting those populations under control. But it also sounded like you're trying to train local personnel to offer medical services. Are you also just training or educating, I should say, the local population as to proper animal husbandry?
Absolutely. There's a big push, especially with Veterinarians Without Borders in Guatemala, on responsible dog ownership. And the interesting thing at both clinics and both communities, quite often the kids are involved. In Guatemala, you know, mom and dad are out doing their work. They can't sit at the clinic and wait for their dog to have surgery. So they would send their kids to the clinic. And so that was a really fantastic opportunity to be able to speak with the kids about their dogs and how they interact with their dogs. In both communities, there were children of different ages, some were quite young and some were older, who had brought in dogs who actually had had their tails docked, and in quite an unpleasant way. And so it was an opportunity for the vets to speak with them in a very understanding way, just like, look, it was the parents or the grandparents that had done the docking. Mm-hmm. And why do you feel they did it? And just to let you know, dogs' tails are allowed to be long. They're meant to be long. And doing this, you know, it's not necessary, and you know, those kinds of things. So having a discussion with the kids and trying to educate them so they in turn can go home and, hopefully have some discussions with their family, and over a period of years start to really see this dog as something that they are responsible for and able to take care of it in a way that is respectful and humane toward the animal. So things like docking the tails and other things that might be done to the animals are not happening as often.
And changing customs, that's marvelous. Speaking of customs, so you have this customized documentary about Vets Without Borders. When is it being released? Tell us more about this project that you have, because I know that you're in a time crunch right now and you need help from the listeners.
Exactly. It's an interesting time in television right now. We're all familiar with the influx of reality TV shows on our airwaves.
So many bad ones.
Yeah, so it's a challenging time. So unless the dogs were attacking humans or the vets were having love affairs, the show wasn't really of interest to broadcasters at this point. The actual wording was, we want animal programming like Duck Dynasty. I don't know how that classifies as animal, but anyway, so it's a very interesting time. So we've been slogging away at this for quite a while, but because it is, there are so many amazing stories to be told, and there is just so much impact on so many levels that can be accomplished. We've been dedicated to finishing the documentary. So what we're doing now is an Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign to try to go to the community and say, okay, look, if this is a story that you want to see, if this is something that you believe needs to be made and shared, please help us. We need your support to finish the film. And also what we're doing is a portion of each contribution that the documentary receives will then go back to clinics in Mexico and Guatemala towards helping with further spay, neuter, and treatment of animals in those communities.
That's
so we're able to have a direct
impact. Great.
Yeah, so we want to have an immediate impact by helping those dogs and people in those communities right away, and then sort of a longer-term impact by creating a documentary that will hopefully build awareness about these types of programs, maybe motivate people to either get behind them financially or maybe motivate other vets and vet techs to start initiating their own programs and start offering their services and putting the pieces together so that we can put the vets and vet techs in the communities where they're needed and start some other local partnerships in new areas. So that's the real impetus behind the documentary is, you know, see some great stories, see what's happening in these communities because it is just so different from our knowledge and experience of dogs and pet care here, and also then have a greater impact and start changing some lives of people and animals.
Erin Skillen and Mike Waverkin, May Street Productions Limited in Canada, thank you so much for being with us today. I really hope that people, my listeners, will go to your site. Tell us the site where they can learn more about this project, Vets Without Borders.
Excellent. VetsWithoutBorders.com. And that will take them right to our campaign site. There will be information about how people can get involved.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I wish you the best of luck with this project. It's definitely one that is totally worthwhile. And who knows, maybe one of these trips you'll find me down there in Mexico or Guatemala. It sounds like it is definitely tugged on my heartstrings and something I'd like to get involved with.
Well, I'm sure they'd be thrilled to have you. Thank you so much for letting us speak about our project today.
Thanks very much.
And my pleasure. So you've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz with The Pet Doctor. Please listen again next week to Pet Life Radio, where you can learn a lot more on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thank you so much. Have a fabulous end of 2014 going into 2015. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.